Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, helping product managers become product masters. Listen and get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. Each week, I have an interesting and valuable discussion on this podcast to help product managers become product masters. Check out how to become a product master using my Product Mastery Roadmap, which is at the same place where you'll find the show notes for this episode. And that's the everydayinnovator.com/119. Today, I have a returning guest. She's returning for the second time to tell us about the pulse of product management. Her name is Rebecca Calogeras. She's the Vice President of Marketing for Pragmatic Marketing. Prior to joining Pragmatic Marketing, Rebecca managed many product management and marketing teams at a variety of software companies. She joins us to discuss the findings from Pragmatic Marketing's 17th Annual Product Management and Marketing Survey. Enjoy the discussion. Rebecca, welcome back to the Everyday Innovator Podcast.
Thanks, Chad. Glad to be back.
I am delighted. Well, I had so much fun with you the first time, and I think you're doing such a wonderful job hosting now the Pragmatic Marketing podcast that you do and webinars. You're a natural host.
Oh, thanks. And I have to say, you taught us a lot. You really walked us through the podcast process and made a big difference in ours. So we owe you for that.
I was delighted to help with that. And listeners, what she's referring to. Interestingly enough to me, this isn't the first time it's happened that I will do a podcast with a guest. And then later they'll contact me and say, you know, we've been doing one ourselves, or we're going to start doing one. Could you share some of your tips? And always glad to do that. I learned from some great people myself. My first mentor was Andrew Warner that does the Mixergy podcast, and have learned from some other good people too. And I'm still at times fumbling my way through, but I'm glad people listen and are finding value. So let's talk about something else that's producing great value for people, and that is the annual survey that Pragmatic Marketing does of what's going on in product management and marketing.
That's right, our 17th edition.
And how long have you been associated with this?
So this is my fifth annual survey.
Very good.
So I've been here for a little over 5 years, and every year we try to tackle it from a slightly different angle and get some more information for the market.
Mm-hmm. And I was just commenting to you as we were getting set up for this, I love the graphics. Your graphic artist does a nice job of compiling the information in a visually pleasing way that can make, you know, this data that's at times kind, I don't want to say boring, right, but it's data, really bring it to life more and convey it better.
Yeah, our designer Norman is amazing, and I think that making all that data really easy to understand and mm-hmm. also to be enticing to look at is hard. You know, when I get it, it's in a spreadsheet, and I'm like, okay, I got my coffee and my, you know, no-dos, and I'm going to look through the data. And he really brings the story to life and makes it much more approachable. So couldn't do it without Norman.
And I do think it's data that product managers and marketers are really interested in, just to get a handle on, you know, some of us are sometimes isolated in what we're doing, and to see what's going on across the industry and how other product managers are thinking and kind of what's top of mind for them is really helpful. So let's dive in first and talk about, what did you learn about the respondents, you know, kind of with the big picture, big buckets about the people that participated in the survey?
Absolutely. And so we were really lucky this year. We got over 3,500 respondents. So we had a huge cross-section. That was 48 different states. There was over 50 countries worth of people who responded. And so we really got a pretty diverse and large picture. So, but even then, you can see some real trends. They're generally male. 61% of all our respondents were male. And this is actually less of a majority than they have been in the past. So we're, you know, it's kind of evening up. But that is also country dependent. In the United States is sort of leading that evening out of the genders. It's a wider gap in a lot of the European countries. Mm-hmm. 35 to 44 years old, they've been in the industry for 6+ years. So they have a lot of experience in product management, but they've been in their specific role for only 1 to 2 years. So we're still seeing a lot of turnover and movement, very typical in the tech space, but we definitely see that here. Super well educated, bachelor's degree or more, 98%, and over 40% of them have master's degree. Hmm. So these are well educated people with lots of experience in business in general. Usually they're 10+ years in business before they even come into one of these product roles. So well-educated, hardworking, generally guys, with work on an average of 3 products each.
Good. And just to share the breakdown of listeners for my audience for the podcast, it does favor male just a little bit. And I think last time I looked at the numbers, it wasn't a big difference. It was about 55% are male versus female.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was actually really encouraged to see that we're getting towards balance there.
And I have to say, totally, I obviously have a bias in the area, but it's nice to see that that gap is lessening because I am passionate about the field. I think it is a great career. You can make real impact on it. And I'm excited to see more and more women get into it.
Yeah. I'm coming across more and more female voices involved too. Experts in the area that are really good to see. So, okay. So that's a little picture of the participants. What about the companies that they work for?
Okay. Yeah. So there's a big variety of companies, but most of these are in the tech space, but it doesn't mean that they're doing, it's not just your traditional sort of IBMs or Dells, traditional hardware or software places. They also would consider themselves financial services technology. We had a lot of education technology, healthcare technology. So technology enabled companies were a good portion of the respondents. We did hardware, software, and services represented, but the majority of them at least had a software offering. So that was, it was a bit of a bias there. And over 50% generated $100 million plus revenue. So these are big enterprise companies in some traditional powerhouse industries with a big software bent.
Yeah, a range of sizes, but a lot of depth there in the larger companies. And I was curious, with the work that Pragmatic Marketing does, preparing so many professionals for product management and marketing, helping them to skill up in that area too, do you just find that that's what we've talked about in terms of the participants and the businesses kind of mirrors where your work is as an organization, or is it different?
I would say it's a pretty representative. Mm-hmm. So we definitely have, we do public and private training. So in the public trainings, we have companies of all sizes from one people to, giant global brands. But I would say that that's probably pretty representative where we are. We do hardware clients and we do some purely services clients, but software is still a major play for us. Mm-hmm. And just growing up in the industry, we had a real enterprise software background. Mm-hmm. That's expanded some, but that's kind of our home base where we came from.
Okay. Yeah. And that makes sense. So to kind of be reflective. And maybe next year we should talk when the survey comes out. Maybe I can help get some other perspectives involved too and get my listeners to help participate in this if they would be willing to do so.
That would be great. And then we've done that in the past for different countries where they reached out to me and said, hey, how come you don't have more data on my country? And I say, hey, how about you help us get more data on your country next time?
Right.
Because that data is so powerful. And I think, that would be awesome if we could get your help in spreading the word to fill out the survey.
Sure. I think it's useful information to get. Okay. So we have some information on the background, the companies. Who are product managers reporting to in organizations? I grew up at a time where you pretty much in product management, you're either flowing into an engineering department of some sort or flowing into a marketing department of some sort. What did you find on the survey?
So this is actually really exciting, Chad, because I can say that product managers report to themselves.
Tell us more.
58% either report up to what they consider a product management department or directly to the CEO. So the sort of I'm a pass-through marketing or a pass-through development, it's still there, 15% marketing, 10% in development, but not to the same degree at all. They are certainly seen as a much more autonomous unit in the organizations that we deal with.
And when they're reporting up to a product management department, I don't know if there was any more data about what that is like. Is that like a PMO for product managers?
That's really interesting. There is not. But it would be interesting to kind of dig into how they were sort of organized within that piece, but I didn't ask that question.
Yeah, just kind of curious. What is interesting is that it sounds, at least from maybe the trend data from past surveys, that product management as a discipline is getting more visibility because it's getting more exposure directly to the CEO or to a department that's their purpose in life, as opposed to also being marketing, also being engineering, but then reports to the CEO.
Yeah, they definitely have a seat at the table, right, in a different way. The other interesting thing in this area that I couldn't really tell if it was an emerging trend or an anomaly, but I went through all the other answers, right? Where people click other and then write in their answers. Mm-hmm. That's always fun. But operations came up a lot more than I'd seen in the past, where product management, and I thought that was really interesting. I don't know if that's an offshoot of they didn't know where else to put it, or a place where it could maybe maintain some neutrality against some of the groups that often tug on it. But I definitely saw a larger number of people reporting through operations than I had seen in the past.
Okay. It would be interesting to correlate that with their job titles, if that's more product marketing type titles related to operations alignment or not. You know, but things to look at.
Yes.
The one question that always comes up is, how many product managers does an organization need? And usually this is put in terms of some other number, right? Like number of engineers, number of salespeople, number of something. Insights into that?
Sure. So I think there's two ways people tend to look at this. It's either how many product managers per product, which I find not to be great, because products can be little teeny things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, this pen that I have in my hand is a product, or it can be a super big suite of software that is a product that has a So that isn't work. So we often look at it as ratios to other departments within the organization. And so for every one product manager, these organizations that we talked to had just over 9 developers. And they had just over 8 salespeople. Now, if we look at it the other way, this has been super consistent. For every one product marketing manager, there are 2 product managers. And that's held up for a while. That seems to be about the ratio that there's twice as many product managers as there are product marketing managers. So those product marketing managers are often shared resources over an even wider collection of products.
In those terms, I don't know if they're self-identified on the survey or if you provide some guidance for the participants. I typically think of the product marketing manager as a person who's responsible for the performance of the product in the market, so what happens after launch. And the product manager, although it varies greatly by organization, would tend to be more responsible for coming up with the idea, seeing that through a business case, seeing it in a development, up to launch.
So it's really interesting because in general, we tried not to rely on titles for most of the survey data, just because it's so, you know, used so differently. So we always do the, are you responsible for what goes in the product or making it fly off the shelf? Mm-hmm. But in this, I just realized that when we do this department size comparison is the one time I rely on titles. So I'm hoping that they define them the way that we do everywhere else. But but I will say, yeah, that 2-to-1 is good. And the other, we've seen, people listening are not going to be totally surprised by this, but a definite increase in the number of UX designers. Mm. There's you know, for every one UX designer, there's 2 product managers, but that's still a significantly higher proportion than we'd seen in the past. So it's definitely a rising field, or at least a rising unique, you know, it's not people doing that on the side with their other jobs. It's a unique role.
Right. I am looking at your report now too, and I was wondering about, you have UX designers as a category, and then we're seeing more, you know, again, titles vary a lot, but the design role is being part of product teams, and that fell out on your study too. You have the product level architects or designers as being part of the mix.
You know, when I wrote this, at least, my thinking was that the product level architect or designers, those designers were more overall systems designers versus the UX designers I'd done in the past. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, maybe some clarity around that. And this is one of the reasons we avoid titles anywhere else, is just so difficult.
It's so challenging that, you know, we those of us in product management, we tend to go by lots of different titles.
Yes. And there was over 1,000 unique titles. So 3,500 people call themselves over 1,000 unique things. And I even tried to standardize for like VP versus vice president. And I was just like, this is crazy.
There's a lot
of VP of great ideas from Chicago or whatever. I was like, well, all right.
A lot of things stand out. And I just did an interview, which will be coming out soon on the podcast, where the wonderful guest was advocating that we need to drop the title product manager entirely and change to success officer, that we should all become success officers, or at least success managers, because it's really about managing the success of the product and optimizing the success. So maybe you might, because of this, he's been talking about this a bit, you might see a new title showing up in next year's survey. Who knows?
I might have to go and look and see if we saw any of those already.
They could be out there.
Yes. Just when I get people used to what I do for a living and being able to say product manager, I'm going to have to start all over again, Chad.
what's the world coming to? Where do we spend our time? Where do product managers spend their day?
We saw very consistently that where they want to spend their time is on the strategic activities. But where they do spend their time is on the tactical activities. And that's like 72% of their time is spent on tactical activities. And these, some of these activities are the ones that, you know, we all feel it, but they on average were spending 40 hours a month on meetings. That's a full work week in meetings. And that, in addition to that, there were 32 hours managing emails, right? So just a ton of times on the very specific tactical items.
That itself is about 2 weeks out of the month. And I appreciate most product managers are going to say they're working, you know, 50-ish hours or so, you know, prior to ever. So, we're, you know, that take that into account. But still, we're about 2 weeks there. Granted, communication is essential to our job as product managers. We have to be communicating with the product teams and the functions that we that are involved in the work. That is a lot of time spent not spending time with where we might want to, which is customers, understanding the problem more deeply, those strategic activities.
A lot of time talking to ourselves and not a lot talking to the market.
Yep. That's important. Was there anything specific in terms of the strategic activities that they said they want to spend their time on, where they would like to spend time?
So we didn't ask which strategic activities they want to, but we did ask which strategic activities they were doing, right? So we asked them to kind of say what areas were they spending a lot of time in. The majority of them came in on the things that you would expect, again, go a little bit on the, if you had a scale between strategic and tactical, they're coming up a little bit on the delivery side, right? Because it's, I'm going to spend time on my roadmap, writing requirements, defining use scenarios, monitoring product milestones, answering sales questions by email or phone. These were huge. Now, those certainly have a strategic component, right? Designing the roadmap is defining where we're going to go. But what was a little sad, right, was that there's so much time on sort of the output that there wasn't as much time spent on the critical inputs to that.
Right.
Win-loss for me is a big one. And this one, it makes me sad every year because, you know, only 26% of them are doing win-loss. And that's very low. And there's so much good data. You know, if you think you're losing because you're missing a feature, but that's not the case, you're going to spend a ton of time building a feature that wasn't necessary. Right. Or if you think, and so spending the time on the output items without the right amount of time in the market is, you know, is just not going to give you good solutions. So we saw less of that. Market definition, including market sizing and segmentation, was underrepresented, about 38%, even business plans. And one area that personally very passionate about, pricing, it was very low, 26%. And the reason that I'm so passionate about pricing isn't because, well, I mean, heck, if you get pricing right, you really help your revenue, of course. But to me, pricing is a fundamental activity that should be done before you build anything, because pricing is knowing what your audience is willing to pay. And you need to know that answer to know whether or not you should even build it, right? So it's like the idea that, oh, we'll just build it and then we'll figure out pricing later. Well, what if you find out that they're not willing to pay, that they don't value it as much as you need to do to make break even?
Right.
Well, then you shouldn't have been in there. So it's one of those areas that more than 26% of us have to be spending time on it. And if we're going to have the kind of products that as an industry, we can be proud of.
Good specifics there. One that stuck out to me also was you mentioned answering sales questions. And something, you know, some product managers are just so good at this that they actually get called to go on sales appointments with the sales team because they're really good at demonstrating the product and talking about the benefits and basically doing the work of sales. Was there anything more about that? I was just kind of curious about, you know, them spending their time helping out sales. It's a question that's come up some on this podcast before. And there's been some helpful tools given in terms of, you know, how can product managers spend time equipping salespeople so they get sucked into those activities less often.
Absolutely. So yeah, 71% are spending time creating those demos, and then 44% of their time are spending time going on sales calls. And I think that the problem is twofold. One is, right, if we're not going to do it, we have to make sure that they can. We have to give them the tools they need, the market understanding they need to do them themselves. And then you definitely see, I've certainly run across some product managers who they're, you know, who get a bit of a kick out of it, right? Mm-hmm. A high from it. It's exciting. You're in front of the customers and they love you. And you just think, well, nobody could do this better than me. So of course I'm mm-hmm. going to do it. This client's really important. But if that's what you're doing, you're missing the next thing that you need to be doing. You're not looking forward and, right. and delivering the product for the next one. So you need to understand that your job isn't to wow the client. It's to empower that salesperson, to give them the tools so that they can.
And I totally appreciate that position too, that it's fun to be out there and to be the mm-hmm. one helping to close that deal. And it is exciting. At the end of the day, we probably have to figure out in our hearts, are we a product manager or a sales engineer? And where do we want to kind of fit, right? And organizations that have sales engineers, that's a really important role for organizations to have. And it does help take some pressure off the product managers. And I think overall improves the effectiveness of sales. But I don't want to get too far sidetracked here. So thanks for sharing where product managers are spending their time and kind of that breakout that they want to be on more strategic activities, but not quite having the time to get there yet. And let's talk about challenges that product managers are facing. What do they tell you about their challenges and their roles?
Oh, one of my favorite parts of the survey, right? So we ask them about common challenges and they tell us whether it's something that happens always, frequently, sometimes, never kind of mm-hmm. idea, right? But they put it on a scale for us. And some of the ones that really popped out as common problems, the biggest one to me is that 34% are delivering features that aren't being used by customers.
Ouch.
34%. Right? I mean, what else could your team be doing then, right? What could your developers have been working on? If you took a third of the time that you spent, let's say, and you figured all of that was for naught, and you gave yourself that time back to do something else, it's fascinating to me what could be accomplished.
That's a great point. I was just on a training call a little bit ago, and one of the questions was about a legacy software system that they really want to revamp the user interface. But they know that there's existing users that would be challenged by those changes. And part of the things we talked about was, you know, what about an analysis of what features are actually being used? And then look at the value that is actually provided. But likely there's features in there that aren't really being used, like the 34% delivering features not used. There's a study in there itself in terms of how do those features get prioritized to make it into
They get in there.
Yeah, the delivery cycle. Mm-hmm.
Well, and there may be a related stat to that, right? Because 35% must commit to adding features in order to close a deal.
So I was going to say this.
I mean, those could be related. They're awfully close.
This might go back to our sales discussion just a minute ago.
Right? And, you know, that's tricky when you're chasing the revenue right in front of you, you're missing that long-term piece. So let's say you build it and maybe they're one of those that no one uses. Maybe it's something only they use. Well, that doesn't buy us a lot, right? And then to your point about old features and old supporting old platforms or legacy items taking time away from new stuff, that 42% said they have difficulty adding innovative features because customers demand the support of old features. So that's the legacy, the technical debt that we're dealing with. And how do you find time? How do you split your activities and your energy so that you can both keep happy existing customers and have a real plan and a real product to gather more?
Absolutely. Challenging. Other challenges that stand out?
Well, I mean, we've talked a bunch about kind of sales support already, but 46% salespeople request customized sales tools on an account by account basis. So we're giving, N equals one kind of support. We're holding the hand versus enabling them to fly on their own. Fly.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as product managers, we would probably all agree that if there's a market demand, we are delighted to create tools to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the one account, that becomes more painful because we know over time, all of it, you know, if there's 10 one-offs, now we have 10 one-offs that we have to manage.
Right. And there's nothing worse when a salesperson asks for a one-off of something that you already have, like that there's like no knowledge in their eyes that it exists. And you think, oh gosh, too, right? How much of it that I don't have it? How much of it, you know, I remember making it. It took me a long time, but it's hard to keep all those things top of mind from salespeople. But yes, it's, I want to make it. I get very excited when we make material that I can see the Salesforce using. I can see the market really engaging with. But there's nothing more painful than delivering materials that no one ever looks at.
So some of the key challenges there, they are working on features that are delivered and actually not used. Mm-hmm. They're committing to features that are required to close a deal. Or I would probably put it, because I've been in those roles. I've had, you know, the goals on my back, having to meet sales also, and been in sales engineer roles. Salespeople might disagree. I think it's much more fair to characterize it as perceived to closing the deal. And if we investigated more deeply against why they're asking for that, we could probably come up with some better plans. Technical debt, big issue to deal with, and supporting those legacy systems, and then responding to sales and specific tools needed to help them. Okay, so those are some of our challenges that are out there. What do we need to make to make product managers more effective? What are they saying would help them to be more effective?
So we asked straight out this year, you know, what could your company be doing or providing that would make you better at your job, that make you more effective? And there were some real trends here. One of them was resources. And I mean, this is not an uncommon thing in any marketing or product management group, but really more people and more budget. And in some cases, it's a budget. Right. Where they're just not given any sort of line item budget items for travel or for any pieces like that. But definitely feeling like, and again, I think this is reflected in that 76% of their time doing tactical in their mind, if they can have a resource come to offset some of these tactical items, and they'll have more time to do the strategic piece.
Right.
And then one of the things they say that they want to do with those is market visits, right? More direct market contact. Talking to the customers, a travel budget so I can go to client meetings, because that's how they're going to get that understanding to drive the rest of them. And then I think the other big pieces are really around the organizational structure itself, right? Mm-hmm. Does my company understand my role, and is everyone aligned about who's doing what? The finger pointing, the overlaps and the underlaps where the roles combine is an area that causes a lot of tensions. And for product management, I think in particular, one of the reasons you could rebrand this perhaps success manager is because people don't know what the role is as it is, right? And every company defines it differently. And that really slows people down from being able to accomplish their objectives because they're having to explain these things along the way. So a real desire for organizational alignment and understanding around the role, and then a real strategic focus from the execs all the way down, avoiding the shiny objects that we chase all the time so that they can kind of move forward in a more consistent path.
I was talking to someone recently who was helping a company, and this may have come up on a podcast. I don't recall if this was part of the interview or not, or the offline discussion, but though it sounds familiar to listeners, this is why. But he was mentioning that the developers had a reputation of being particularly slow inside the organization. And so when he was helping out the organization, he went and asked them about this and said, they had a cool name for it, but I forget what it was. This basically was a 1 month wait policy, which was any time that the senior team comes and asks for something from the product team, they wait a month because more times than not, the requirements change and then they've just wasted work. So they have created this internal culture of ignoring requests for a month to see if they actually stick or not. I thought, this is not... I can understand why that exists, but it's not a real functional way of dealing with the problem.
Right. And it's so recognized by every other layer of that organization that they build a moratorium process into it is crazy. But we've all been at companies where it's, hide, here comes someone with another, this week's great idea.
Yep.
And they're distracting. It's really hard for people. And I think really good product managers do this and do this well, to say no. Mm-hmm. And to push back on truth to power, we call it, right?
Exactly.
Can you tell them even the things that they don't want to hear? And you really have to hone that skill on how to do that and in a way that they can hear it and accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And over time, that requires building up your own influence and your ability to speak in an authoritative and reasonable way with those senior leaders on the information you have, the data you have, and why you believe that position needs to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Truth to power.
Yes.
Okay, so we covered lots of important aspects here, what's going on with individual product managers, the organizations they work with, where they're spending their time, how they like to be spending their time, how organizations can help them be more effective. I thought it was interesting, one thing that you highlighted on that part to be more effective was the market visits. That goes back to the strategic need of working with customers. And for anyone in leadership and organizations, I just want you to hear, market visits are not sales visits.
Yes. Repeat it again. Yes.
Right. You have this data that, you know, they're spending time on sales activities that they probably feel like they can be spent better elsewhere. And getting out into the market to understand what the customer's problems are is not a sales opportunity. It's really to understand the next level of problems that we can now develop products to create more value for them in the future. So I just had to put that in briefly.
Oh, yeah. And it's so true. Right? Don't the expectation shouldn't be sales? The goal isn't. It's not how it's measured. It's not why it's important. It's a very big difference.
Any other items out of the survey that you want to highlight?
So one of the things that I did that's not in the write-up survey was actually cut the data by executives. Right? Hmm. What do executives look like differently than what the average respondent, the independent contributor, might be? And there were a few areas where they did things, specific activities that were consistently under their domain that I found really interesting. Hmm. For one thing, so we always ask, you know, are you more about figuring out what should go in the product or more about making it fly off the shelf or each about equally? And we found that when you got back up to the exec level, the answer was the majority of the time was each about equally. Huh. So something to think about as product managers climb the ladder, make sure you have a good understanding of the product marketing. You don't need to have to do it, but you need to know it and understand the role and the goal, because when you get to that top level of the organization, that's going to be under your domain. Another big thing that they do and do more often, which we talked about a little bit as being obviously very important to me, is pricing. And looking at product profitability. These were at 68% and 75% under their domain at a totally different level than we saw in the individual contributor. Mm-hmm. So again, you may not feel empowered to do those now, but those are skill sets and conversations that you should start to insert yourself in and understand, because they're part of what's going to help you really move to the next level, as is being able to articulate your distinctive competencies, mm-hmm. right? Really understanding at an organizational level, not just the product level, distinctive competencies is a great skill for any product manager, and one that was clearly being flexed a lot more by the execs. So I just thought that was interesting to look mm-hmm. at the data from that side and say, oh, what would I need to do if this is what I wanted to be?
Well, I'm really glad you added that, because coincidentally, I was thinking of areas that I might like to know more about from a survey like this. And that was one area, which was, I'd be really curious for you to be able to break out the data for executives specifically and ask executives what they want from their product managers. What do you want more mm-hmm. of that you're not getting? And you addressed it so well in what you just described. My reason for that is I want to help product managers prepare for more senior leadership roles. So let's start thinking about now, what is it that your executive team wants from you that mm-hmm. you can start contributing to?
I think that's a great question. I also think it's a really good question that I will add next year, and we can talk about it. But I also think it's good. I like asking that as well as what the execs do today, because mm-hmm. I sometimes think in organizations that don't have sophisticated product groups, that they're asking what they think what they want you to be doing, mm-hmm. and not what you really can make an impact with, right? They may think they want you focused on requirements and sitting in stand-up meetings, but if you could start delivering some of the strategic value, they'd be like, right. Well, that's obviously what I meant to ask for you. Right. But I think seeing the two views would be really powerful.
Yeah.
What else would you like to see in next year's survey?
So this goes back to that distinction between product manager and product marketer. And I don't think that's, at least in the way I think about the spectrum of product management, I don't break it up that way. I just know that it exists, you know, in our world. I tend to think of it in terms of three big buckets, which is the ideation part, sometimes called the fuzzy front end, the actual product development piece in the middle where we make it real, and then the product lifecycle management or the post-launch activities, right? Mm-hmm. And I'd be really curious for participants, you know, as they were taking the survey, to self-identify into where they spend their time, you know. And so in my view of things, it's one of those three buckets. Some people's view, it's product management or product marketing. it's so ambiguous, right? It's tough. So I would, mm-hmm. you would have to mm-hmm. lay out some model to say, you know, where are you in the spectrum? Because then I think it would be really interesting to correlate some of your insights with where they are in that spectrum, right? If they're really, if their world of product management is the product marketing of I'm responsible for launch of product and staying competitive with that product in the marketplace, you know, throughout its life until we retire it, you probably get a different perspective than someone who's just developing ideas and pushing them through a new product development process. And that, I think that would be interesting.
I like that idea. We call that the product triad, right? Sort mm-hmm. of the idea, the technical aspect, and then the go-to-market. But it's really hard. I'm trying to figure out how we could divide them up and have them self-identify without right. picking the buckets ahead of time.
Right.
Right. So instead of taking two or three buckets, how do I use what they give me in order to make groupings? I'm going to have to think about that one.
There you go. Yeah.
I have 11 months to do that. So that's good.
Some things to ponder. But I think this is a very helpful annual survey. It's a great kind of pulse of what's going on for product managers. We should be familiar with what's going on in our industry. I did ask you about salary information. It was interesting. I just saw this morning a new report that came out on tech jobs specifically, and product management is at the top of the tech job salary on this list. Which and growing, it's higher than it was, and then they're expecting it to be higher next year. So, pretty good place to be. Not all product management is in the tech world, but certainly is getting a lot of attention lately. Was there any information on salary that you just want to bring in?
So you know, we get lots of good data where we talk about salaries. We look at them by regions of our country, it plays out as you would expect it to, regions of the world, and then we look at factors that contribute to where they come, like what other attributes that we talk about in the survey mm-hmm. appear more or less often as it relates to salaries. And so you know, there's still a big divide between things like male and female. Mm-hmm. And I actually had someone ask me, you know, we get a lot of questions right after we publish it to dig in and ask about, well, what is that like in Canada? What is it like in, you know, Acme Town? You know, right. They try to get super specific. But they said, you know, is there really a big divide here? Or is it just that those gentlemen happen to have more higher degrees more often, or more higher education or longer experience in the field? And so we looked at it really specific criteria. We did, like, you know, we looked in California, roles this long at this height with so many people, and nope, there was a big gap in salary. It was significant. Mm-hmm. And actually the higher in the organization it got, the bigger the gap got. So hopefully we're shorting that up. But one thing that always surprises me, but it held true again, is that there really isn't a salary bump based on your longevity at a specific company. Hmm. So it's, you know, I don't know which part of this plays into it, but they tend to move every 2 to 3 years. But even if they stay 5 or 6, you don't see a bump in salary based on that unless they flip levels.
Okay.
I think that's interesting.
It is. It would be interesting to look at the bonus structure. Does that bonus structure change any over that time too? My guess is probably not, but
yes,
as a product manager, I would want it to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and 80%, over 80% get a bonus every year. So it's definitely right. a firm part of the compensation. And they're mostly based on profit numbers. Mm-hmm. Some break them down into more specific areas, you know, from product profit versus company profit, personal objectives. And then there's a few that actually do it based on market visits or other customer satisfaction and NPS ratings mm-hmm. was named quite a bit this year for the first time too. So it's a split in companies that do those bonuses by sort of tactical output items and versus overall company or product success.
Mm-hmm. Good information. And as you know, since you have listened to the podcast some, I like innovation mm-hmm. quotes, and I always like people to bring an innovation quote for us to talk about briefly. Do you have a quote to share with us?
I do. I always want to find like this hidden gem, Chad, that you've never heard before, but I know I can't do that. So I've decided I won't do that. And I'll use one from, you know, Steve Jobs, which of course you've heard before, but it's the innovation is saying no to 1,000 things. Mm. And I think it's a powerful quote. I think it's what we talked a lot about in this survey, right? The time spending tactical versus time strategic. We just have to get better at saying no.
Absolutely. And it's a challenge. It's tough. It's why we see organizations struggling so much with choosing projects in the first place, because everything looks good, right? And you got to say no to the things that aren't at the top of the list of being strategically aligned with your organization.
Absolutely.
Thank you for sharing the quote. Maybe next time when we do the next annual survey, you'll have a little more time to work on this and you can try to stump me with one. So
I want to. I'm going to do a quote and then I'm going to see if you can name who it is. And I'll do a real quote. I won't be like, you know, from my husband, Chris.
But it might be a really good quote. Who knows?
Yes. Well, that's true. Good. He has some good quotes.
And can you share with the Everyday Innovators how they can find this survey that for themselves, the results of this, and any other information you want to share about what's going on with Pragmatic Marketing?
Absolutely. So you can find out about the survey at pragmaticmarketing.com/survey. You can absolutely reach out to me directly. There's a link right from that page. If you have questions about the survey, if you want to see the data cut in a different way, if you just have an idea about what we can ask next year, like Chad had, that's always great. And I hope, you know, Pragmatic Marketing, we also have a magazine that comes out that's free, some webinars and podcasts that Chad talked about. So we're passionate like Chad about the industry and about teaching people. And we absolutely hope you check out those resources. Pragmaticmarketing.com.
Rebecca, thank you so much. I appreciate the review of your annual survey with us and look forward to doing it again next year with you. And thanks for the time.
Thanks, Chad. Always a great time.
Hey, thanks for listening. Many listeners email me topics they would like to hear discussed on this podcast, and I love getting those and finding guests to help them with those ideas. The easiest way to do that is to get on my email list, and then you can simply reply to any message I send you. When you sign up for my free Product Mastery Roadmap, I'll also add you to my email list. You do that at the same place where you'll find the summary of this discussion with Rebecca. And that's at theeverydayinnovator.com/119. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit our blog at theeverydayinnovator.com.